Welcome to the Healthcare IS podcast, where we tackle today's challenges in the health IT workforce. Broadcasting live from Sacramento, California, here's your host, David Cushon.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. This is David Cushon, Managing Partner of Healthcare IS. Welcome to our third podcast. And as always, thank you for your comments, Facebook likes, and LinkedIn shares. Our philosophy is that these podcasts are about our listeners and giving our listeners the type of information they're looking for to help them either in hiring or in their careers and how they're managing their career and looking for new positions. So any feedback you can give us to guide the type of information we provide, we certainly appreciate it. So please reach out to us with our thoughts, with your thoughts, and we'll do the best we can to get that information out to you. So just a couple of quick announcements here, and we'll roll into the agenda for our podcast today. First off, we are now on iTunes, so go on out to iTunes.com and look up Healthcare IS so that you can stream or download our podcast straight into whatever device is most convenient for you. Also wanted to announce that we've recently added two additional authors to our blog. The first one is Allison Harrison. She's a blog project director with Healthcare IS. We'll be focusing on hiring strategies that'll get you the A player when you're looking to hire somebody on a full-time basis, a permanent basis to your team. Allison's been in staffing and with our company for 8 years now. And also another blogger, Ashley Whitmore, who's our communication specialist with Healthcare IS. She does a lot of the work behind the scenes in helping us get prepared to get information out to you, whether that be on Facebook or LinkedIn or here on the podcasts. And she's going to really be focusing on providing feedback and reviews in regards to different technologies that travelers can use to make their life as a consultant a lot easier. So today's podcast will have our two standard segments. The first will be our tip segment. What we're going to focus on here is going over how to price yourself as a contract consultant so that you do that properly and do it in a way that it's going to make financial sense for yourself and know that you're making the right decision. Also, the second part will be an interview today with David Stansberry. This will be the third interview that we've done with a pharmacy informaticist, somebody who focuses in pharmacy, IT, and technologies. David's somebody that is a consultant through our firm right now. He's been a pharmacist for 30 years. He spent 23 of those either directly in or related to the IT space. He's worked in hospital settings as well as working for vendors in the marketplace, in the pharmacy space. Today, Dave works specifically in working with Siemens clients on a national basis. Okay, so with that, let's get to our tip segment for this episode. Okay, so we're back and we're at the tip segment of our podcast today. One of the things I get asked quite a bit, and the people on our team get asked quite a bit about, comes specifically from people who are on salaries, whether it's working for a provider setting or working as a consultant on salary. And these folks want to get into contracting, and the number one thing they have problems with is really figuring out what their hourly rate should be. Now, there's a couple factors that come into that. What marketplace are you in? What are the conditions of the contract in terms of travel requirements? What's the demand like? But I think a starting point is to determine the hourly rate that you're going to need, not necessarily to maximize your income, but to make sure you don't accept a rate that is less than you're really going to need, and being able to take into consideration everything you're going to have to pay for, as well as having a reasonable idea of how many hours you're going to be working that year, so that at the end of the year, you will at least make a minimum amount of money that you know you need to make for this type of a career transition to make sense for you. So the first thing you need to do is figure out what your total compensation is currently. So how do you do that? Well, your total compensation right now includes your salary, bonuses, your benefits that you receive from your employer, as well as any retirement contribution your employer is currently making. So if the organization you're going to join as a contractor pays your benefits. You don't have to put benefits into the equation because they'll be paid for. But if the organization you're going to join as a contractor does not pay for your benefits and you're going to need to purchase them on your own, this is something you're going to need to look into how much it's going to cost. And these things would include things like medical, dental, vision, disability, anything you're accustomed to having that you're going to have to go out and replace. So again, your total compensation is going to be your salary, your bonuses, any retirement contribution that's made, and the cost it's going to you're going to incur by having to go out and provide those purchase those benefits. So what you do from there is you've got your total cost, and today as an employee on a salary, you are compensated for 2,080 hours of work. Now, you don't necessarily work 2,080 hours because you do probably have paid time off in line with vacation and holiday pay and personal time off, but you're being compensated over 52 weeks, 40 hours a week at 2,080 hours. All right, so now that you have your total compensation, that's going to be your base number for calculating the hourly rate you're going to need to have. Now, keep in mind when you're an employee, you're being compensated for 2,080 hours of work, but part of your compensation includes paid time off. As a contractor, you are not going to be paid for the time you take off, and you need to factor that into consideration. So you have to have a more realistic or have a realistic idea of how many hours you will be working. You're not going to be getting paid for holidays. You're not going to be getting paid during vacation you choose to take. And you're not going to be getting paid while you're in between contracts. And so for a lot of people, these times of not getting paid makes them really nervous and discourages them from getting into contracting. And if you don't have the temperament for that, then maybe contracting isn't the right situation. But I think if you take those factors into consideration and plan for them and price yourself accordingly, you can eliminate the issue of not getting paid during that time. So let me give you an example from here. Now, again, we have our base rate of the total compensation that we were earning and need to be able to replace for purchasing our own benefits. If you're working in an area where you are truly offering some expertise to a marketplace, and there's good demand, reasonably good demand in that marketplace, then you should safely be able to be working 42 weeks a year. So that's 10 weeks off. That's certainly covers the holidays that you won't be paid for. It covers a few weeks of vacation, and it certainly covers a few weeks in between multiple engagements, if you have multiple engagements. If you work a one-year contract, then you don't have any time off for that year. But if you worked a couple of different four-month contracts, you might have a few weeks in between. Again, if you're in a marketplace with good demand and you have a strong skill set in that marketplace, you should very reasonably be able to be working 42 weeks a year. So 42 weeks a year times 40 hours a week is 1,680 hours. So right off the get-go, if you take the amount of money that you need to be earning and you divide it by 1,680 hours, that's going to give you the hourly rate that, if you accept, you're able to get, you should be making at least as much money as you were making as a full-time employee. Now, some of that money you make, you're going to turn around and purchase your own benefits. So it's not that you're looking to make the same money, but if you get that hourly rate that you just calculated at 42 weeks a year for 40 hours a week, you will be able to replace the benefits you were used to accustomed to having, as well as earn the same amount of money. That should be your base rate. That should be something you're aware of. If you have concerns about not being able to work 42 weeks a year, either your skill set isn't up to speed where it should be to be a consultant, or maybe you're overcompensating because of some fears you have in making this type of a career change, and this may not be the right thing for you. But I think if you ask enough people, 42 weeks a year, you'll find is certainly something that's not going to be a concern for you. So you have that hourly rate. So here's the thing to look at. Again, our baseline is 42 weeks a year, 40 hours a week. At this rate you just calculated, you're going to be breaking even, making the same and earning the same as you were before. So here's a few ways to make how you can make more money. Number one, if you work 40 hours a week for 42 weeks a year and you're able to get a higher hourly rate than you just calculated, that's one way you're going to be able to make more money at the end of the year. Secondly, if you get the hourly rate you just calculated while working 40 hours a week, but you're able to work more than 42 weeks a year, then again, at the end of the year, you're going to end up being compensated more than your previous position. Lastly, if you get the hourly rate you just calculated, but only worked 42 weeks a year, but during those weeks you worked, you're able to work more than 40 hours, that's the third way that you're going to be able to get earn more money at the end of the year. So these are some questions that I've asked. That's a good baseline way to calculate what you need to be asking for in terms of an hourly rate. And if you're able to get it financially, things you won't find yourself with any financial pitfalls. Of course, there's many reasons to get into consulting and many reasons why people do get into consulting on a contract basis other than money. But it's certainly an area that you need to make sure makes sense for you in order for this to work out in the long run. And of course, based on the examples I've just given, if you're able to get any two or three of the three variables I've given you, maybe you get a higher hourly rate and you're working more than 40 hours a week and you're working more than 42 weeks a year, those are the situations where people can find that they're earning 25 to 40%, in some very hot markets, maybe 60 to 70% more on an hourly basis over the course of a year than they traditionally earn on a salaried position. All right, everyone, welcome back. Here we are at the interview portion of our podcast. As we've done before, we're trying to provide as much information as we can to people who are considering healthcare IT or informatics as a good step for them in their career. And by what we're trying to do is have interviews with experienced consultants in the marketplace or people who've transitioned in the IT space, just to give you a better perspective about some of the things that take place in this area of pharmacy. And today we have David Stansberry with us. David is been a pharmacist for 29 years, 23 of those years in the IT space. He's worked at both hospital settings. He's worked for vendors. And he's also been in the past and currently is a consultant, pharmacy IT consultant, and specifically today works primarily with Siemens clients across the country, helping them with their implementations of most technologies right now related to pharmacy and meds process. Dave, thanks a lot for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, hey, Dave, just kind of wanted to get your insight on a few things overall from your perspective. You've got a lot of experience. Tell us kind of right off the gate, because one of the questions I get asked so often that I'd like to throw your way just to get a perspective is, in your opinion, what do you think the difference between an IT pharmacist is, or compare that to an informatics pharmacist?
Well, an IT pharmacist, I think, is more the guy or the IT person that in the pharmacy that is doing the day-to-day stuff, doing the maintenance things. They do some upgrades of systems. They get into, you know, some peripheral things, like maybe dealing with Pyxis a little bit and some interface stuff. But what I think where the informatics piece falls in, the informatics guy does that, what I just said the IT pharmacist does, but they also get more deeply involved in how systems integrate into one another and how to use the data between systems to help their fellow pharmacists up on the floors or in the, you know, working in the main pharmacy to be able to do some different things, you know, like renal dose checking or IV to PO conversions. They're a source of getting that data to the end user as well as to their management team, so that the management team can make decisions about how to, you know, what H2 block are they going to use in the facility from a price perspective and usage perspective and things along that line. I think that an informatics guy, he learns how to tie everything together better and use the systems to what they're supposed to be used for, and not just maintaining the systems, which I think is what a lot of IT pharmacists, you know, that's where you start out, and then you kind of grow as you grow over the time period. You kind of learn the other things.
Great. So it sounds like that incorporating that informatics component from your perspective is how organizations really use this information throughout the entity as opposed to just dealing with it in the pharmacy.
Yeah, I think that that's a key to it, is the informatics person learns how to work with the other departments and stuff as well to, you know, like I said, be able to use the information that's there in a productive manner.
Okay, great. Tell me, what when you look back on your career, what originally, what caught your eye about the area of pharmacy IT or informatics? Do you recall what they were referring to it at the time? Or, you know, what generally caught your attention and got you to think that this might be a career path that, that would be exciting for you?
Well, it was for me, it was back in my days as a hospital pharmacist in Baton Rouge, where they were installing a pharmacy system back in the late 80s is basically when it was. And I think a lot of the pharmacists were very hesitant at the time to, you know, jump in and you know, be able to use the system and stuff like that. But what ended up happening for me, I became interested in it. I became one of the top or our top end user. So when a pharmacist needed to know how to do something, enter an order into the computer, they called me and didn't call the management team, the people that actually had set up the system, because I actually took the time and learned how to do a lot of the things that others just didn't know how to do. So that's what got me interested into it in the beginning. So it was basically when they were doing standalone systems for the most part, and they were before all those systems were really, really integrated like they are today.
Yeah. I hear that so often, that it wasn't anything that somebody necessarily planned for, but getting exposure to it kind of brought a different perspective to how you can help the organization and leverage your clinical information or knowledge in a different way. Was there ever a time, you know, here you are now, you're exploring situations, you're getting involved in this area. Was there ever a time where you kind of left the office, left the job that day, left the hospital, wherever it may be, but was there ever a time where you went home and said, wow, I'm not sure if I made the right move here?
Well, not really for me. There was a time when I was working in with a vendor as, you know, one of their implementation people, and it was just time to move on out of that position. But I think I always felt when I left there that I would be back into the pharmacy informatics piece of it at some point. And actually, you know, it took about a year. I went back to work as a staff pharmacist, and lo and behold, the hospital I was working at, they were implementing a new system and basically earmarked me to do the pharmacy side of that system. So I've never looked back. I've always enjoyed what I've been doing with it. So I guess, you know, that's kind of how it went for me.
All right, good. Well, that certainly helps. You know, I know that it's not for everyone, and fortunately, you know, it's good to make that career move. I know you made a good decision. When you look around and you see different people that have transitioned in the pharmacy IT space as a career, and you look at some of the folks, specifically the ones that maybe have not succeeded or have decided that it really wasn't for them, have you seen anything that you can put, you know, kind of put your finger on that you could say, you know, I've observed some folks that this hasn't worked out well for them, and here's what I think it is? And I'm asking that question to maybe give a perspective, some additional perspective to people who might be considering this area.
Well, I think the first thing that I've seen is people, when you come into this side of things, you give up some of the clinical aspects of pharmacy. So I think a lot of people, especially coming out of school nowadays, they're looking for that clinical job and, you know, trying to find that, you know, they want to be, everybody wants to be a clinical pharmacist. And so when you step into the IT part of things, some of that, you know, some of that hands-on clinical thing, working with patients, working with the nursing staff, you know, quite frankly, it gets minimized. So I think people miss that. And I think that's one of the things that people go back and look at and say, hey, I really missed the clinical side of things. I really would like to, you know, be more involved in that. Another thing is it can be a fairly fast-paced environment in the IT world sometimes, and people, you know, aren't prepared to handle that. And I think you have to take it you have to learn a little bit about how that all works and stuff like that. And if you don't give it enough time, I think if you don't give it enough time, I think you can sell yourself a little short. So that's kind of the things I think I see in that, and why people have not been successful.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And I think, I guess right along with that, when you talk about leaving the clinical side as well as this fast-paced environment, are there maybe within that realm, or are there other specifics that come to mind in terms of a couple of things you've seen that you deal with day to day that somebody getting into the profession may not be expecting, that you could kind of, I guess if you were sitting down with somebody getting into the profession and say to them, here are one, two things I know that you're not considering at this point because you won't realize it until you get into this side of the pharmacy aspect of things. Here's some things you need to consider.
Yeah, the one thing that comes to the top of my head real quick is that you'll be very surprised the number of your colleagues that don't get what you're doing, don't understand what you're doing, and don't care what you're doing. They're doing something else in pharmacy, especially, you know, obviously, you know, they're more focused on the clinical side of things at that point. And they're not they're, you know, and you're interested in this IT thing, right? And you're excited about it and all those kinds of things. And you're going to find there's a lot of other people that aren't very excited about it. And it's a little interesting to find that, you know, you got 20 pharmacists here at the hospital that you're working at, and you're the only one excited about it. So it's kind of interesting that you have to overcome that. Okay, it's still okay. I'm doing this, and try to see if you can get somebody else's interested in it as well. But it's that's the thing I think you'll notice right away with others.
Yeah. Well, maybe not even just not as excited as you, but maybe disliking what they're having to participate in. I've heard from time to time.
Yeah, exactly. That as well.
Yep. Okay. So when you think back, again, to give some perspective, what do you think was the biggest surprise, or what do you think will be the biggest surprise that, if there's anything you can add on to what you've already said, that most people who get in this area aren't necessarily expecting? You know, one is kind of maybe some advice to give them, but what surprised you the most when you got into it?
Obviously, when I got into it, you know, 20 plus years ago here, you know, computers are new, okay? So people were just starting to use computers and those kinds of things. So when I got into it back, you know, 20 plus years ago, you were having to teach people how to use computers and things along that line too. That's not so much the game anymore. People understand how to use computers, and I mean, pharmacy students that coming out of school and stuff like that, obviously they've had lots of computer experience. So that older crowd still are a little less likely to understand the computer side of things, especially if you're going to a place that may not be as advanced as a place that maybe you went, you know, that you were before. You know, example, you know, at where I work prior to what I'm doing at consulting, where I'm doing now, pharmacy staff have been using computers for years, but we're implementing some CPOE products and stuff like that now, and not just in pharmacy. We're doing some new stuff with pharmacy as well, but some of the nursing staff haven't ever touched a computer. So all of a sudden you're implementing systems and things along that line that, quite frankly, you know, people aren't ready to do, and it takes them some time in that learning curve to do that. So you got to help through some of those kinds of challenges as well.
That makes sense. Tell me, you know, one of the things I'd like your perspective on, you've got a lot of experience in different environments, different settings. I get asked a lot by retail pharmacists if there's a place for them in pharmacy informatics. And I'm curious of your opinion. Do you see a place where a retail pharmacist can come in and bring value on the inpatient side?
Yeah, well, you obviously most of the, you know, the informatic IT pharmacies type positions are in the, you know, the hospital type world and not really in the retail environment. And I think, you know, what I would see is the struggle is that, you know, the retail pharmacists do a certain type of clinical work where they're counseling patients and doing those kinds of things, and a certain group of medications that they're counseling patients on as well. If they're trying to transition into the even just into the hospital side, what I've seen is, wow, all these IV antibiotics and IV medications and things like that that are never used in the retail world, they have that transition to make just to learn about the drugs and things, the clinical aspects of hospital pharmacy. And if they're transitioning also into an IT world, so they're trying to learn two things at once. I think that can be a struggle just because they're not, I mean, they learned about those drugs in school, but it could have been 10 years ago or 5 years ago.
Sure.
And they're just not familiar how those meds are prepared and how they're dispensed and those kinds of things that you know, somebody that actually was working in a hospital already understands how that all works. So their transition would be just to learn the IT side of things, as opposed to the retail guy that's going to have to learn retail and is going to have to learn, you know, there's going to be a certain amount of clinical stuff that he's going to have to learn as well.
Okay. Have you ever worked with someone who's transitioned from the retail side in an IT role? Or have you ever seen that happen?
Not into the IT role. I worked with somebody that's transitioned just from the, you know, retail to hospital pharmacy, and that's why I get the clinical piece of that.
Okay.
But I've never seen anybody transition to the IT part of it. But, you know, I'm sure there's people out there
sure.
that have obviously done it and been very successful at doing it.
Well, maybe that's a good stepping stone because of the different facets that they've got to get familiar with, at least go retail to the clinical side, and then from there decide to go to IT as you did, many others have done.
Yeah.
Okay. So also, I guess, you know, one of the things that I deal with quite a bit are clients that look for pharmacists to join their organization, either in full-time roles or in IT, in a consulting capacity. And traditionally, they'll ideally, I can understand this, want a pharmacist who is familiar with either the software or the technologies or devices that particular client of ours has implemented already. And I can understand why it might be ideal, but can an informatics pharmacist who has no specific familiarity with the technologies in that particular environment, can they walk in the door and, in your opinion, bring value? And if so, in what ways, if they're not familiar with the technologies already in place?
Well, in my opinion, you know, I've actually installed three different, you know, pharmacy software systems in my life here. So, and what my opinion, worked with two other different systems. They all work very similarly. And what I think is that if I'm obviously very familiar with Siemens at this point in time, but I was very familiar with Meditech at one point in time as well, and very familiar with PRX Pharmacy Systems at one point in time as well. They all do things very similarly. They all have a drug dictionary. They all have room beds to worry about. They all have cart fill to worry about. They all have a SIG or a frequency file. It's just how you put it all together. And so I think for me, when I went to learn the Siemens system, really it was not that big a deal. I actually had no formal Siemens training on the Siemens system for 4 years. You know, I was using the Siemens pharmacy system and primarily in charge of it for 4 years before I ever went to a training class when we were doing a big, big upgrade. They finally said, hey, let's send you to training class. So I think if I'm a Siemens pharmacist and I'm going into an Epic hospital, I think I can bring some value to there because I can look at what their system's going to function very similar to what I've already experienced in my career. And I can bring a different perspective that, hey, you're doing it this way, but what if you could your system possibly do this? And maybe their system could, but they haven't thought about it because they're so ingrained in what they're doing already as far as things go.
Sure.
And if you obviously do go into the same system environment, you have a much, much bigger advantage, and obviously you can come up to speed much quicker on what people are doing. But I don't think you have to have that experience. I think within, you know, a month you can be running on the other system. You're going to somebody's going to sign you on, and I bet within a day I could be entering orders on that system without much problem. And you show me a few database things, and I'll know how to enter a drug within a day, too. So those kind of things, I think, it's just a different screens or whatever that you'd have to learn to do it. But all the systems that I've been involved with, I've transitioned from one to the other pretty easily, and I haven't seen that to be a huge problem. Same with CPOE. Obviously, I've worked on a couple of different CPOE systems in my career, too. They all work very similar. You set up orders for people to transition, the doctors to order medication orders, both tablets and capsule type stuff and IV type stuff for piggybacks and large volumes. They all work very similarly, and it's about how you set up those orders on the CPOE system so that they flow through an interface appropriately to get to pharmacy, so pharmacy has an easy time to validate those orders, and the time, your turnaround time is much, much, much easier in that way.
Right, right. Well, so if I can summarize that, I think also it sounds to me like the more experience you gain actually going through the life cycle of a particular type of implementation, the more times you've been through it, the more value you can bring, even if you don't know the specific product or software that's being installed that you're going to join.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I've seen it in my consulting career here where we bring in some people that aren't very familiar with the Siemens product, but you get them up to speed in a short period of time, and then they're, obviously very helpful in getting the implementation to where we need it to be. So.
Perfect. Great. So, a lot of organizations I work with will have, let's say, a position that, hospital A and hospital B have the same position. It does the same task. One hospital calls it an IT pharmacist, and that job is in the IT department. In another hospital, it's an informatics pharmacist, and it's in the pharmacy. From your experience, because every organization has things set up just a little bit differently, I know that, my question is going to always have a degree of it depends on the organization and culture. But from your experience, do you see advantages and disadvantages from doing work either for the pharmacy department or for the IT department?
Yeah, let's start with if the pharmacist is working, the IT pharmacist is working in the IT department. Well, if you're in the IT department, you tend to have more access to things like servers and the teams that deal with the servers and the printers and the desktop team, and you have more access to those kinds of people to get things done. Okay, but you also, IT politics tends to be a little different than pharmacy politics, and you're having to deal with some IT politics as well. You probably tend to be on call a little bit more from an IT perspective than you are if you're in the pharmacy perspective. And that can vary between institutions a lot. So, that's just been my experience.
Sure.
The IT people have been more on call than the pharmacy people have been. And when you're in the IT, you're not in the pharmacy, so you're not part of not part of the pharmacy. So you tend to lose some of what's going on inside the pharmacy internally, meaning not knowing that X drug is no longer available, or there's a shortage on this drug, or this person's left the department and they wanted your resources and stuff like that. You tend to lose track of some of that, I think, if you're in the IT side. On the other side, if you're the IT pharmacist working in the pharmacy, I think you obviously are within the pharmacy department. Typically, you're probably part of the management team, or you report directly to the management team, or the director or assistant director of the department. So you tend to be more involved in what's going on in the pharmacy. You can develop what your goals, the goals of, you can develop what you're doing as part of what the pharmacy goals as a department are. So you tend to, the department goals tend to kind of go, the IT goals tend to kind of go along with them a little better than if it's the IT driving that, if you know what I mean by that.
Sure.
So for me, it's always been better for me to work within the pharmacy department than within the IT department. But it just, you know, again, as you said, it's going to depend on organizations, how they want to structure that and how that all works within that organization. There's, as we've talked, there's advantages and disadvantages on both sides. If you're actually in the pharmacy side, you still need someone on the IT side that's kind of your liaison person to the IT department so that they can run the IT side of things for you, so that if you need a tape loaded or you need your drug updates loaded and things like that, they're doing those kinds of things still for you because you don't have access to them. So there has to be a liaison person no matter what. It doesn't necessarily have to be a pharmacist, but it has to be someone in the IT department that's that pharmacy IT liaison as far as things go, though.
Well, you've given a lot of good information and perspective in the differences. And as we both said, it's going to always depend just a bit. To maybe look back a little bit and reflect, can you think of maybe a time in the past, or maybe based on your experience, think of a specific situation where if you were in an organization to do a job with your same skill sets, where it would be maybe more advantageous for you to be in pharmacy, which I know you mentioned you prefer to be in most cases, but then maybe a situation or a type of situation where you think it might be actually better to be in the IT department. Can you think of a scenario in the past, or maybe scenarios moving forward where if you were walking in, you would strategically ideally like to be in one area or the other?
The one thing I can think of immediately when we were building a CPOE system, pharmacy obviously had all the data that we needed to build these different orders and stuff in the CPOE system. But we provided spreadsheets and stuff like spreadsheets to the IT department to build all that stuff. And quite frankly, obviously people aren't familiar with drugs and things along that line. And there was a lot of mistakes made, and there was a lot of rework having to be done and testing and stuff like that. Because of that. So, I mean, I would, you know, provide data. Let's say I provided 100 lines of data. I probably got 50 lines of data back. I tried to send 50 lines of data back to them because they just didn't do one little thing right. And if I had built it myself, pharmacists tend to be a little more anal, let's say, use that word, about how they do things, because, you know, they deal with the, you know, patients and things along that line. We're just a data entry person on the IT side, not nearly as concerned about some of those kinds of things. So I had to be real careful in the testing phase of those kinds of things, being that. Reverse side of that, the current thing that I'm doing, I'm actually working in the IT department, and I'm the one building all the orders and stuff like that. And the downside of this downside I'm finding is that because I am just a consultant and I haven't been working there, I have a hard time getting data out of the pharmacy sometimes. So when I need to, you know, get data on building epidurals or PCAs or how do they build, what solution you're using to build this particular piggyback, I have to go to the pharmacy to get that information, and it's been a struggle to get that information. So it's got that's the plus and minus, you know, of building in a CPOE environment. One, the data, somebody else is building your data, and the other, I'm building the data, but I don't have all the data because I have to go back to the pharmacy to get that data. So it can be a little frustrating either way.
Yeah, well, thanks for that perspective. I think not only for any listeners that are new to the profession to get a different examples and perspective of what takes place depending upon what department you work in. I think it's you certainly provided some good examples for experienced people to take additional information into consideration when thinking about where they need to best be aligned when they're stepping into new projects. So, I mean, that's very thorough. I appreciate that. You know, with that, I've kind of wrapped up my questions here, Dave. I think you provided a lot of good tangible information that our listeners can take into consideration to determine if this sounds like a career that would be good for them. But I know in listening that you've also provided a lot of information here that, especially for people that are considering new positions or new contract engagements, can really take into consideration when evaluating whether or not or which types of projects are best for them or positions are best for them. So just want to say thank you for being here today. I appreciate it. And maybe love to do it again some other time.
Sounds good. Thanks again for the opportunity.
All right. Thank you. Okay, everyone. That wraps up this episode. Thanks again for listening. As always, we would appreciate any comments you may have, any input you have in terms of the type of information we can push out to you. We'd love to hear it. Go to our website, healthcareis.com. Go to the blog section and feel free to leave a comment for this episode. We look forward to hopefully having you listen again next month. Thanks.